This podcast was brought to you by withaim.co.
Welcome back to Vanishing Shadows. In the last episode,
fear sends a tremor through me, rattles my bones. If Benjamin gets released after this, he will be lethal. The officer sees my angst and presses on.
As the intended victim, you might know something useful. Detective French would like you to come to the station.
I could crack under a harsh interrogation, spill all my secrets, my own deadly plans. But if I refuse to go, it will look bad. I will look guilty. And so, I give him an obliging nod. Give me a few minutes. The police station is loud, frenetic, rank with testosterone. I keep my eyes forward, alert only for Benjamin. He is somewhere in this building, and I am still terrified, even here. Detective French leads me to an interrogation room that is much smaller and beiger than the ones I've seen on TV. After ushering me to a wooden chair, she offers me water, soda, or a sandwich. She is being kind to me. She has clearly been trained on how to handle victims of a crime. But she is not my friend. I must not forget that. She slides a couple of sheets of paper across the table toward me. Here's some information on crime victim programs that you can access, and a list of victims' rights attorneys. Thanks. If you need a break at any time, just let me know. The police are under increased scrutiny of late, their actions and attitudes judged and analyzed. Detective French is being gentle, professional, playing by the rules. The force is concerned about lawsuits, about bad press. I know this is protocol. Still, my guard is slipping in the face of her manufactured kindness. I mustn't let it. I glance at the pane of one-way glass and picture the men behind it. The same ones who took my husband away, who wandered through my house looking for evidence and taking photographs. Some of them are still in my home right now. The ones who aren't watching me. I need to know if I'm in danger, I say. What does conspiracy to commit murder mean? That Benjamin was planning to kill me? How? And who ratted him out? We'll make sure that you're safe, French says. It is meant to sound reassuring, but it comes across dismissive. She ignores the rest of my questions. Tell me about your marriage.
We didn't have a marriage.
At least I can be honest about this. I mean, we did, legally, but it wasn't a relationship. I was Benjamin's property.
How so?
We had a contract. A total power exchange contract. I did what he told me to do, or I'd be punished. If I refused him, he'd end our marriage. He'd kick me out of the house with nothing. And he'd throw my mother out of her nursing home and onto the street. Empathy flits across her features, but her voice remains professional.
We're going to need to see this contract. Where is it?
It will be in a safe, I say. When I'd grabbed the money for Lee, my gloved hands shaking with nerves, I'd noted the stack of documents, but I'd been too afraid to sift through them. Too worried that Benjamin or Nate would catch me in the act. I'd quickly grabbed the money buried under the pile of papers and shut the door. It's in his study.
Do you have the combination?
No, I lie, thinking about that slip of paper hidden behind the picture frame. I can't admit that I know about it, or that I know what's inside. I was never allowed access. She nods, write something down, though I am being recorded.
You said that Benjamin punished you. Physically?
Sometimes. I'm sure this is difficult, but can you tell me how? He would whip me with a cat of nine tails, and I had to spend hours alone in a basement room. My throat feels thick. But the emotional abuse was worse.
What did that look like?
He insulted me,
He made me feel stupid and worthless. A tear slips from my eye. He didn't let me see my own mother. And yet, you stayed with him? I bristle. This detective has drifted into interrogation mode. Why do abused women stay? I retort. Fear, shame, lack of options, all of the above. She realizes her mistake, opens her mouth to correct it, but I cut her off. You don't understand the kind of power Benjamin has over me. I don't have my own money or bank accounts. I'm not allowed to choose my own friends or order my own meals in restaurants. A shudder rips through my chest. He controlled my body. He made me get breast implants. I'm sorry, Hazel. French's voice is conciliatory. That's awful. My mother is a hostage. I'm crying now, fat tears falling onto the table. If I don't do what he wants, she's as good as dead. French reaches behind her for a box of tissues. She waits as I dry my tears, blow my nose, and then she continues. Did your husband have other lovers? I don't know. And it is true. He worked a lot, and he traveled. It's possible. And you? She prods. Did you find comfort in anyone else? Her expression is soft, non-judgmental, but I won't fall for it. No. My face is hot, and I hope she thinks it's outrage. I wasn't allowed to go anywhere without his permission. Even if I'd wanted to, I couldn't have had an affair. You must have left the house on occasion. Does she know something? Is she trying to catch me out? I was allowed to go to the grocery store, I say, my voice steady. Sometimes for lunch with friends of Benjamin's choosing. Can you tell me the names of those friends? Sure. I recite their names as the detective writes them down. Vanessa Vega, Lori Gamble, a handful of other highbrow women I saw on occasion. If the police contact them, they'll be appalled. They'll gossip and speculate about the situation over wine and canapes, but that's the least of my worries now. Did your friends know about the abuse in your marriage? No, they weren't real friends. I couldn't be honest with them. If I opened up, they'd tell their husbands, and it would get back to Benjamin. So no one knew what your husband was doing to you? No. You must have had someone to talk to. Lee. She knew it all. She had listened and supported me. Our friendship may have been a con, but there had been genuine moments. No, I say. I had no one. Do you work out? She asks casually, eyes on the papers before her. Pilates, exercise classes. My stomach plunges with dread. This line of questioning could lead straight to Jesse. But I maintain my composure. I jogged mostly, in the park near my house, but I was allowed to go to yoga classes and to the gym. And the name of your gym and yoga studio? I tell her, as breezily as possible. Obviously, Jesse can't still be working there. Benjamin would have paid him off, beat him up, sent him packing. But what if one of the other trainers had noticed our chemistry, our disappearing acts? Or what if one of Jesse's colleagues knows where he is? If the cops find him and ask him about me, what will Jesse say? He can't reveal our plot without incriminating himself. But my chest feels tight with dread. Any hobbies? She asks. I like to bake, I tell her. Nothing outside the home. I shake my head. That should do it for now, French says, flipping her notebook closed. Is there someone I can call for you? Someone who can come get you and be with you? The only person I can imagine comforting me right now is Lee, but she is gone. And if she isn't, she certainly won't support me. She will hate me for my betrayal. There's no one, I tell her. I'm completely alone. That's how Benjamin wanted it. She taps the sheet of paper on the tabletop. Get yourself a lawyer, Hazel. And with those words, my interrogation is over. I slouch on the battered leather sofa, a mug of herbal tea warming my hands. The waiting area has brick walls, potted plants, and a middle-aged receptionist who glances over at me sporadically, her eyes gentle and compassionate. I had called several lawyers from Detective French's office. Rochelle Graham was the only one who could see me today. In fact, she was one of a small handful who agreed to see me at all. My husband is well known in the legal community and has a reputation as a ruthless brawler who does not like to lose. This makes me an unappealing client. But Ms. Graham is righteous and brave. She is up for the challenge. An Uber brought me to this office in trendy Belltown, a downtown neighborhood close to the waterfront. Our appointment isn't until 6, but I have been sitting on this sofa for an hour and a half. I have nowhere else to go. I'm afraid to go home. And I feel too vulnerable to browse through shops or cafes while I wait. Too exposed. My husband was plotting my murder. I could still be in danger. Finally, the office door opens and a man emerges. Ill-fitting gray suit, receding hairline, scuffed dress shoes. His face is pink, eyes watery, and I wonder if he has been crying. The woman who escorts him to the exit is tall with cropped hair, dark skin, and an aura of steely competence. They exchange a few words in the hallway. His voice emotional, hers reassuring. When she returns, she addresses me. Hazel Laval. I obediently jump to my feet. Rochelle Graham, she says, taking my hand in her strong, warm grip. Come on in. In contrast to the bohemian serenity of the waiting room, her office is cluttered, chaotic, a mess, basically. But she doesn't apologize or make excuses. She ushers me toward a chair, still warm from the man in the gray suit. Rochelle sits behind a desk rendered invisible by files, papers, devices, law books. Let me tell you a bit about myself, she begins. I was a prosecutor for 17 years. You might think that their interests and yours are the same, but that's not necessarily the case. There are politics at play. Personal agendas. I nod because my throat feels too tight to speak. You need a strong advocate who works for you. Someone who knows your rights, and who knows the system backwards and forwards. I can guide you through the criminal court process and explore avenues in civil court. My only objective is to see that you get compensation and justice. She doesn't need to sell me. I am in. We discuss her fee and I assure her I can pay. I have access to my credit cards, for now, at least. And there are valuable items in my home that I can sell. Rochelle instructs her assistant to prepare a contract, and then she opens a laptop perched atop a pile of documents. So, your husband has been arrested for conspiring to murder you. It almost sounds comical in her breezy tone. Yep. Tell me. And I do. Against the soundtrack of her fingers on the keyboard, I tell her about our total power exchange contract, about Benjamin's cruelty and control. I need to see that contract. The police will have it by now, I say. And then I tell her that my mother's well-being kept me captive, that she would die on the street if I ever left my husband. I had no life of my own, I finish. I was no more than a pet, a possession. Did you have a prenup? Of course. Benjamin made sure that I'd get practically nothing in the divorce, and my mother's care would be terminated. Her fingers stopped moving. So, why kill you? My eyebrows shoot up in response to her question. I mean, he had you under his thumb. You did everything you were told. If he divorced you, he'd have to pay you a pittance. So why does your husband want you dead, Hazel?
I know about attorney-client privilege. I know I could tell Rochelle Graham the truth.
That I was having an affair. That my lover and I were planning to murder my husband. And she would be legally bound to keep my secrets. But when I begin to speak, more lies come out.
I have no idea. He must hate me.
Why? Were you cheating on him?
No.
The word flies from my lips so easily. Then why would he hate you? What did you do?
I've been more assertive lately, I say,
which is only true of the day he confronted me about Jesse. I've been less obedient, just not doing as I'm told, talking back. It infuriated him. She exhales through her nose. I'll be a stronger advocate if I know the truth, Hazel. As your lawyer, but I cut her off. That is the truth. My words sound firm, convincing in my own ears, but her brown eyes meet mine with suspicion. For a moment, I fear she'll dismiss me, tell me she can't work with a dishonest client. But eventually, she breaks her gaze and changes course.
You have a right to know the case the prosecution is building, she says, setting her laptop aside. I'll find out what evidence they have and who they're calling as witnesses. You'll likely have to testify.
My chest clutches at the thought of facing Benjamin in a courtroom, of the questions his legal team will ask me and the lies I will be forced to tell. I can't.
In Washington State, they can subpoena you. If you refuse, you could be charged with contempt.
And if I testify, I could be charged with perjury.
But I didn't know Benjamin wanted me dead. I try. There's no point. I have nothing to say.
I might be able to arrange video testimony so you don't have to see your husband, she offers. But I'm not going to lie to you. A trial will be ugly. Benjamin Laval is known to be a barracuda. His team will come at you. They'll disparage your character, bring your credibility into question, and they will be vicious.
My heart palpitates as I imagine the assault. I am no match for David Vega and the other attorneys at my husband's firm. They will interrogate me, badger me, and I will crumble, fall apart, incriminate myself. I will be caught out as a liar, a slut, and an attempted murderer myself. This whole situation feels like a runaway train, and every time I open my mouth, I stoke its engine.
There's a chance this won't even get to trial, she says. Your husband's team will be working every legal angle to make this go away.
Go away? I struggle to take a breath. If he gets out,
I trail off, press my fingers into my eye sockets, feel the dampness of the tears welling there.
Rochelle's voice is calm, soothing.
For now, he's behind bars.
But I could still be in danger. Who was he conspiring with? I need to know.
I'll see what I can find out, she says, brow furrowed. Have the police arranged an officer to guard your home?
They said they'll have a car out front.
Change your alarm code, she instructs. Do you have a gun in the house?
No, I don't know.
Tears spill over at the thought of my inability to defend myself. I'm like a sitting duck in a glass mansion.
Maybe Benjamin does, but I don't know where it is.
Rochelle gets up and moves around the desk. She gently pulls me to my feet, holds me at the elbows. I'm on your side, Hazel, she says, eyes penetrating mine. I'm going to keep you safe, and I'm going to get you through this. Now I know why the man in the gray suit was crying.
Rochelle Graham's fierce protectiveness in the face of so much hostility undoes me.
Not since my friendship with Lee have I felt this sort of compassion, this type of support.
Tears stream down my face.
Thank you, I mumble, sniffling pathetically. Abruptly, Rochelle steps back, resuming her professional manner. Let's take care of the paperwork, she says, and then I'll get to work.